that they're an other, that is a farmer or a person in business farming. They must register the camp. The Bureau shall establish rules for registration. And upon receipt of the application for registration at the top of page 6, the commissioner shall conduct a pre-occupancy inspection. If the camp was not registered prior to January 1, 1989 with Accident Prevention Division and has not been registered with the commissioner in a prior year. So we're grandfathering in those several hundred camps that are currently registered with APD. They don't need a pre-occupancy inspection.
Good.
We're also providing in line 6 that the camp operator may request, even if they're not required to have one, they may request an inspection. If the division is determined that the health and safety conditions existing on the camp are not in conformance with the rules, that is a state plan for health and safety, then that is if APD determines that, then Boley shall not register the camp until APD determines the camp complies. So Boley is registering, but they won't register the camp until APD signs off on it. The director and the commissioner shall adopt an interagency agreement to provide for joint pre-occupancy inspections of the proposed farm worker camp to ensure that it meets health and safety, conforms with laws, the operator is properly endorsed if necessary. Section 7, every farm worker camp operator shall comply with the various rules and statutes. That is Boley, APD, wage and hour laws, building codes, health and safety laws. They shall distribute money when they should. They shall comply with terms and provisions of all valid agreements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They shall post a notice in the area of the farm worker camp frequented by occupants containing information about the operator, the phone number and the name, address of the bureaus. We go on to say that the farm worker camp must be posted that the farm worker camp is registered. The phone number and address of the Accident Prevention Division. Other information.
Hold on,
okay, so we go down to Section 8.
Line 13.
Line 13.
Paragraph C, a statement that inquiries regarding the terms and conditions of occupancy may be made to the Bureau.
The Bureau of Labor and Industries. And then on line 19, a statement that inquiries regarding health and sanitation matters may be made to the division.
Okay. All right.
Or the Bureau if the address and phone number listed. But the division is the enforcement arm for health and safety.
Senator,
we're not attempting to violate that. Yes?
The division requested that or the Bureau be deleted in that reference because they felt that they were the ones who enforced health and sanitation matters.
Okay, we will make a note of that.
Okay.
Okay, and then we are going on down to upon request, a valid camp endorsement or registration certificate must be produced to any person with whom the operator intends to transact business as a farm worker camp operator, and that's to protect them, of course, from dealing with someone who's not licensed or endorsed as a farm labor camp operator. Then, finally, on the top of page 8, no farm worker camp operator shall operate a camp which is not registered, shall not make any misrepresentations, false statements, or willful concealment on the application, et cetera. They shall not do fraudulent, misleading things. All the way down, and then by force, intimidation, or threat in any matter whatsoever, induce any occupant of a farm worker camp to give up any part of the compensation the occupant is entitled to by contract or by state or federal wage payment laws. By force, intimidation, or threat in any matter whatsoever, restrain any person who wishes to leave the camp from doing so. This is getting at the prison camps. Section 8, no farm worker camp operator, and again, this is all operators, shall discharge, evict, or in any other manner discriminate against any person because, and you see 1, sub 1, sub 2, sub 3, sub 4, includes making a claim against the operator for the occupant's own personal services, instituting any procedure under this act, testifying in any proceedings, or discussed or consulted with anyone concerning the occupant's rights under Chapter 658, 405 to 485, that is, Boley statutes, believe those would be .405, .485.
That's the farm labor contractor.
Farm labor contractor law. I think I'm catching the flu that everyone has seemed to have, so, and that you just got over, Mr. Chairman.
Fun stuff.
Just a little bit fuzzy, my thinking here. Section 9, the commissioner may revoke, suspend, refuse to renew, or refuse to issue an endorsement if, and you can see sub 1, sub 2, sub 3.
Okay, and reading section 9, okay, how do I go about doing that? Where's the contested case or other kinds of, how does the commissioner decide that she's going to do that? Okay, that I've got an endorsement, and the commission decides she's going to revoke my endorsement because I've violated or failed to comply with the rule.
You're saying there should be a due process or something. Okay.
Is that assumed that this is something subject to administrative rule?
Senator Cairns, I believe I've been looking down at line 16, and that, in fact, does not pertain to line 9, and I can insert it. Line 16 of contested case hearings.
Right.
But I see when I look at it that that pertains to the penalty.
Right.
And the same should apply to line 9.
Don't you think so, Mr. Hill? What do you think?
I don't think
she ought to just, you know, be able to capriciously wake up one morning and say, I don't like those people.
No, I think a due process would be justified.
Okay.
What I would do on line 5 after the word individual is probably insert as provided in and put their ORS run
good
in there.
Thank you. Section 10.
Just one small point. I notice, is the operator and endorsee, are they the same?
No. Operator is the broader term and includes those camp operators who don't have to get an endorsement under the earlier language of the bill. That would be the farmer or the farmer's wife or the farmer's son or the person involved in a farming corporation that files a Section F on their tax return.
So you couldn't turn down an operator who was not an endorsee because of character, reliability, or competence?
No, it would be the sole authority given in Section 9 is to revoke, suspend, or refuse to renew or refuse to issue an endorsement. So this only pertains to
if the
endorsed operators.
You can refuse an endorsement if the operator, who in our hypothesis is not an endorsee, has violated or failed to comply with any provision of this act. Is that what you mean, too? I'm sorry.
Mr. Dale?
If I may, Senator Shoemaker, in Section 9, we're talking only about the endorsement on the farm labor contractor's license. Now, in Section 15...
Yeah, no, the problem is that we're using the words two different things, the endorsee and the operator.
I'll suggest
them to be two different things, don't we?
Mr. Chairman, on line 7, cross out operator and write in endorsee.
That's really what you're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good.
It works just fine.
Section 10.
Okay. Section 10 provides civil penalties not to exceed $2,000 for each violation of any provision of Section 3-18 of this 1989 Act.
Okay.
And then provides that a judgment may be filed if the penalty is not paid within 10 days. The current civil penalty for violation of labor contracting law is the same.
I like Section 11.
Section 11, you can't, agreements purporting to modify rights of workers is void, is contrary to public policy. Section 12, all fees shall be credited to the Bureau of Labor and Industries account for the administration of the Act. The intent is the Act be self-supporting or substantially self-supporting, generate the fees necessary to administer the Act. Section
13, go to 14.
Rulemaking authority for the Bureau. Section 14. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay, now we're getting back to the registration.
Endorsement. Oh, top there.
Yeah, takes care of this.
Okay.
On page 10, lines 4 through 6, provide that all proceedings take place under the APA.
Okay. All proceedings relating to the issuance, revocation, suspension, renewal, or refusal to renew an endorsement shall take place under the Administrative Procedure Act.
So you already had it.
So we don't have to add it.
You just forgot you had it. Okay.
Oh, and you got as many good things as we've got in this bill, you overlooked a few when you're going through it.
All right.
Section 14, any individual may protest the registration of any proposed farm worker camp, and the commissioner shall give the individual an opportunity to state the reasons for the objection.
How does that objection come? Is that an anonymous phone call? I call up and say, I don't like this person down the road who operates a farm, and they have some people on their farm, and I don't like it, and I'm not going to give you my name, but I'm going to protest, and then the commissioner is required to act based on that?
No, the commissioner is not required to act based upon any complaint or information provided under Section 14. But an individual must be given the opportunity to provide information if they wish.
Okay, so there's the worst of all hypotheticals. I could go down the road, drop a quarter in the payphone required to be in the farmer's yard and complain about them.
Sure. In fact, you can do that now, Mr. Chairman, under the complaint procedures, but it would be...
The commissioner doesn't have... All she has to do is listen to and register the complaint.
That's correct.
To say, okay, I acknowledge your complaint.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm puzzled, and I think you probably can clear me up on it. It talks about revoking or suspending the registration of a camp, which is different from an endorsement of an operator of a camp. And where in this bill do we provide for the registration of a camp as opposed to the endorsement of it?
Senator Shoemaker, that's back in section...
Those are the guys who
section
are not...
Section 6.
Those are the farmers who have that...
Section 6. So, okay. Section 6 provides that each camp operator shall register with the Bureau each farm worker camp operated by the operator. So,
okay, you're all right.
Okay, and that's different from the endorsement for farm labor contract.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Section 15.
Mm-hmm.
The commissioner may revoke or suspend a registration upon the commissioner's own motion or upon complaint by an individual if... Sub 1, sub 2, sub 3, sub 4. The camp is no longer in compliance with the provisions of this act or any rules adopted thereunder. Conditions under which the registration was accepted have changed or no longer exist, or information supplied by the operator applicant included misrepresentation, false statement, or willful concealment.
Tell me about the Class A misdemeanor in Section 16.
Oh.
What have we got as far as the penalty provision?
That, Mr. Chairman, would be a penalty for failing to register or obtain an endorsement as required by the law, by this act.
What do we do to people who are engaged in this business who fail to comply with the current registration law?
It's a civil penalty, unless so they're operating as a farm labor contractor, and I believe then it may be a criminal penalty.
Okay, so this is an upgrade from a violation, is that right?
Upgrade from civil to criminal.
A civil penalty to a criminal.
Allow either.
Yes.
So it permits either?
Well, currently we don't require registration and we don't require endorsement for camps. APD
has a civil penalty for the condition of the camp or conditions that may occur in the camp.
Yes.
Failures to meet standards.
That's
in
correct.
The camp.
And operating without a farm labor contractor's permit, all legal and everything, mm-hmm. can be a criminal violation.
Now.
Yeah. And that's a misdemeanor currently?
Currently, it's a misdemeanor in the statute that was, or in the bill that was just passed by the Senate.
Okay.
It would be upgraded to.
So we're saying register your camp. Everybody, register your camp. And to the farm labor contractors operating a camp, get your endorsement.
Right. Senator Schumer.
Mr. Chairman, would it be appropriate where we deal with misrepresentations, false statements, and willful concealment to put in a standard of materiality there?
Material misrepresentation,
yeah.
False statement, to differentiate between inadvertent?
Yeah.
That would be fine, Mr. Chairman.
Good. To protect against abuse by
that would go on line 18 between any... and misrepresentation.
And also back on page 9 in line 13,
okay,
where you're talking about spending an endorsement.
Page 9, line 13. Yes, that would be fine.
Okay.
All right. Section 17.
Okay, section 17. If any government agency determines a camp is not habitable and the camp must be closed, this would primarily be APD, Accident Prevention Division. BOLI, under this act, could determine a camp not to be habitable if there was no endorsed operator or otherwise legal operator.
Well, why are we using the language, if any government agency?
When I originally drafted this, I was asked to include building codes officials of local governments.
And health officials.
Yeah, they're health officials.
There. Should we enumerate those? Or should we?
Well,
I think they ought to be enumerated.
APD has a concern about that language as well.
Yeah, I'd like to have them enumerated.
Senator Cairns, there's a problem with enumerating the different kinds of agencies that exist in the 36 counties. They're not all building. I mean, they have environmental services. They have so many names, we'd have another 20 pages.
How many?
Maybe 21. What I could do is any local government agency concerned with building standards or health standards.
Well, any government agency with the power to enforce, authorized to enforce, and then enumerate the powers that you're trying to get. Because you don't want some government agency coming in there and asserting a right that isn't theirs.
Well, they couldn't do that unless they had statutorily received that right to assert.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that you wouldn't find some, you know, that couldn't, you know, we're trying to avoid mischief if we can.
Mr. Chairman, the only concern I have is that we not inadvertently exclude an agency that should, that does have the authority to find a camp.
Well, it's habitability that we're looking
operable.
At, though. Yeah. That's all we're looking at is habitability. Isn't that correct in Section 17? Okay, so what we want to do is simply say that any government agency with the authority to enforce standards of habitability determines that the camp is not habitable. Then, if somebody else, it's like, you know, if some other authorized agency shows up and say, well, I'm a government agency, we'll say, well, sorry, pal, you don't have the authority to enforce the habitability standards. You know, have a nice day.
That would be the case then if DEQ came and said that this camp has been established on a toxic waste site. They wouldn't be included in here.
They would be.
You want
yes.
them included.
Well, I would assume that they would be included.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Not if we don't put them in under the way you're saying it.
Mr. Chairman, there's also the instance if the camp is built illegally and it's not permitted where it's built, there may be a government agency that's not enforcing health and safety, but who may come along and say that can't be there anymore.
Would it be possible to come up with some weasel words between now and Monday's work session that would accomplish what you want, but not use the term any government agency?
We'll do our best, Mr. Chairman.
Weasel words.
Yeah, because that's also a hanging point on this one, because I can hear the arguments about authorized. We had this with authorized. We'll get it with any government agency.
We need WWs.
Anybody want to do that one again?
Mr. Chairman, maybe we could get at what we're dealing with here on line 26 when we talk about determines that a camp is not habitable and that the camp must be closed. Maybe we could put, and the camp is ordered to be closed. So that would necessarily involve an agency with that power. Then we go on to say the camp operator shall provide alternative lodging.
Yeah, would the DEQ be able to order it closed? If
yes.
it were built over a toxic
It could
pump?
Order it to be vacated.
Well, great.
The county health official could order it to be
vacated. Unless there was a closed order. I mean, if just somebody says it must be closed, that's
so
not
the
good.
Building codes agency could order it to be vacated if it was built without a permit.
Okay, well, here's what you do then. What you do is work this thing. If any government agency orders a camp closed because it is not habitable, isn't that what you're trying to get?
Yeah,
if they can't issue an a valid order, then they're not a government agency we should be concerned about.
Okay, so we can say their ability to issue a valid order.
If any government agency determines that a camp is not habitable and the camp is ordered to be closed.
Yeah, whichever. Okay? You got it. Section 18.
Section 18, Mr. Chairman, is to provide that except to appeal from any act, an act or determination of the commissioner, no person transacting business is entitled to demand, receive, or accept any fee directly or indirectly to maintain any suit or action in the courts of the state involving the business without alleging or proving the person was registered or endorsed to transact such business. This has to do with standing in the courts, and Sue, why don't you speak to this, because I think that you understand it better than I do.
Members of the committee, this subsection is similar to plumbing and builder's board, where you don't have access to the courts if you're not properly registered under the board under which you should register. That's how it works with building codes and plumbing. In this case, it would work that way for an endorsee and a registrant.
So if you haven't registered, if you're not in it, if you don't have an endorsement,
you can't shelter.
You're
behind
out of luck, huh?
If you're not endorsed or registered, you can't shelter behind the alleged business name or organization that was not registered or endorsed.
Okay.
Section 19, Mr. Chairman, is existing law that we're amending. We're deleting the term or the sentence down on line 25 and 26. This allows the director to assess civil penalties. This is Accident Prevention Division. To assess civil penalties as provided for violation of occupational health and safety laws. It goes on down. Any employer who's received a citation for a violation of such requirements and such violation is specifically determined not to be of a serious nature may be assessed a civil penalty of not more than $1,000 for each such violation. We're deleting, however, a civil penalty shall not be assessed against a farm labor camp operator when the violation is a first-time violation.
No first bite. Took away the first
we're
bite.
Eliminating what appears to be favoritism in this particular statute to farm labor camp operators. There appears to be special protection that no other employer enjoys, and we're just treating people.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I want to back up, if I may, to Section 18, Sub 2, where you give standing to any person to bring suit. I just want to have you speak to that. You say the commissioner, director, or any other person may bring suit to enjoin a violation. Now, I assume that was done knowingly.
I think that's Mr. Dale. Is that you, Mr. Dale?
This language is drawn in parallel to language that comes from the Farm Labor Contractor Registration Act and the
from
intent.
Which?
The Farm Labor Contractor Registration Act. And the intent here is essentially to allow workers to enforce minimum compliance with the Act. But if you say worker or employee, then you lose people who have been fired or who have not yet begun work or who may have been promised work. I'm not sure what other persons would have an interest in proceeding.
Okay.
Now, I'd note that Section 18 does not provide punitive awards. It provides for prevailing party cost and disbursements and a reasonable attorney fee.
So
in addition,
got to have been damaged.
The amount of damage is recoverable. So we're talking about damages, not punitive.
Okay. Awards. So that it's a private right of action, but it's somebody who is clearly and materially affected.
That's correct.
Well,
and
no,
it only
has to be. You could have an officious intermeddler, but there's not apt to be.
An officious what?
Intermeddler.
Is this a term of art? I love it.
It has a beauty of its own. And it's correct, Mr. Chairman. You wouldn't have to be a person who is materially interested, but then you wouldn't win damages because you hadn't been damaged.
Yeah. Well, you get $500.
Yeah.
Or whichever is less, yeah.
Whichever is
greater.
That's the amount of damages recoverable.
Actual
but if
damages.
You're not entitled to damages, you wouldn't get $500 or anything else. You just get your attorney fees and prevailing party costs.
That was your intent? Because that's not what you say.
It says the
amount of damages recoverable from the farm worker camp operator who violates this act is actual damages or $500.
Right.
Whichever is greater. So I think you're giving them
The individual must suffer damages to be awarded damages, though.
No, you're giving them $500. You've got actual damages of zero, and then say, ka-ding, pay him $500.
But the key words are the amount of damages recoverable. If the person encountered no damage, they would be awarded nothing.
I think he's right. Let's work on that one, okay?
Michael Dale, for the record, would it be helpful instead of saying any other person to say any aggrieved person?
No. That stuff's okay. I don't think we've got to get this stuff down here about the $500.
If damages are found.
Well, I don't know. I think aggrieved person isn't so bad myself.
Yeah, I know.
The amount of damages.
Is Mr. Dale an aggrieved person?
The intent is to have people who are damaged get an award for damages. People who aren't damaged may prevail and cause the law to be enforced, but they would not be eligible for damages. They'd only be eligible for attorney fees and
court costs. Well, then we need to clarify the language.
What we're looking for is a minimum damage of $500. If damages are found, the minimum is $500.
Okay.
Is that correct?
If damages are found to have occurred. Something to that effect.
Okay.
If damages are not found to have occurred, no damages award may be made.
Okay.
What if they were, this isn't relevant to this bill particularly, but something where you can't prove a damage, like they were denied access or something like that, which is very difficult to put any monetary value, then I know. I'm just saying, if there's something that they do that's been done that you can't put a monetary value on, it seems that was the intent. That's why you put $500 there. So they will get something because they violated the act. But even if they didn't have any specific...
I think that we can cover that by saying if there are damages.
Okay.
Yeah, we want actual damage to occur. Okay. Why do we have the September... I jumped over to Section 20.
Section 20.
Because...
September 1.
It's a kindness to the government agencies, and that we give them some time to set up the system.
And everybody will know what the ground rules will be in the 1990 growing season.
It with an E-clause on it, you wouldn't have time to set it up. I mean, it would just automatically go into effect.
Why do we need an emergency clause? Something as complex as this.
Because they can start working on the forms and rulemaking and everything else and get geared up to...
And we are in the middle, it'll go into effect in the middle of the summer. Yeah. So we want to try to have an effect at least at some point this year.
I was looking at when an effective date would be, which would be probably sometime in September.
Okay. Probably the first Monday in September, right?
But
first Monday in September would be fine with me.
And so I backed from there, and I put an E-clause on it and then gave them the usual 3 months. It would almost have the same thing as a regular effective date, but would give them time to gear up.
Okay.
All right. Now, Mr. Chairman, there is one piece that was left out that was agreed to in concept in the small group discussion. That is, when the pre-occupancy inspection is required, there should be a fee charge to help defray the expense of the pre-occupancy inspection.
Thank you all. Great work. Appreciate it. Let's get on to our hearing, and we'll let people know that we're going to have the bill up for a work session on Monday. Is that correct? Okay. Mr. Dale, I assume you are in the good bill should pay us category?
Yes.
Thank you. Byron Hawkins and Phil Goulet. Ms. Hukari, would you like to join them? Is she here?
Yes, she was in the back of the room.
Where is Camille?
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Hawkins starts, can I point something out here?
Oh, yes. Why don't you do that?
Okay, there's a fellow from Dexter named John Bogus, who's taken a number of photos of farm labor camps in Oregon, and he's had them on display around the state, and they're up here for the benefit of the committee. They show some of the conditions that prevail in Oregon in farm labor camps, and it really illustrates some of the problems we're seeking to address. We'll leave them up here, and committee members and audience members can take a look at them later at their convenience.
No one would accuse those of being bogus pictures?
Oh, they're not bogus.
But they are bogus. Would it be possible to have those available to the members of the Senate, say in the Deb's Potts room or some other place for a public viewing?
The pictures?
Yeah, would be Mr. possible? Chairman, that's entirely possible.
I'd appreciate it if you'd investigate that.
Well,
Mr. Hawkins, do you know where Mr. Goulet went?
He went down to another hearing in transportation.
Okay, we'll call him if he returns. Go for it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Byron Hawkins, Manager of Labor Commodities Department, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. The Farm Bureau opposes Senate Bill 732. The Farm Bureau is opposed on three fundamental portions of the bill. We oppose the bonding requirement. It hurts the family farmer and the smaller farmer. Now, Senator Hill has indicated in here, if I understand correctly, that it was meant to be on the just the labor contractor. But as I read the Section 5, the first sentence there, it says, each applicant shall submit with the application and shall continuously maintain thereafter a bond approved by the commissioner. It doesn't essentially say whether that's for the endorsement or for the registration.
Mr. Chairman, I can clear that up and answer that question.
We can't clear it up right away.
The term applicant is defined in Section 2, and that's where the protection for the farmer is. Applicant means an individual who proposes to operate a farm worker camp and who is applying for a farm for a camp operator endorsement under Section 5. So that would be an application for an endorsement.
Where is somebody who is
that's on the first